After Diagrams by Pier Vittorio Relli. This is from log number 6 from 2005. And it opens with a quote by Carl Andre that says, "Nothing ever truly disappears." Diagrams, as they have been conceived and used in architecture throughout the last century, have the power to simultaneously construct, design, and expose an idea, while at the same time simplifying and idealizing facts and events of the world as simple science. Diagrams are powerful devices, but also problematic ones, in the sense that they are constantly updating the representation of a work beyond its effectual truth, and thus reducing it to an ever-changing image. The diagram, therefore, tends to become an accessible language that easily absorbs and consumes things and events, a consumption of our experience of the world as it exists around us. Because of its evolutionary nature, to ignore or refuse the diagram puts one in an impossible position. It is not possible to totally refuse it, precisely because diagrams are inevitably also a form of language. But one has to be skeptical and aware of the way this language is constructed, because it is very similar to the rhetoric of language itself. Language is continually exposed to the risk of being the mere camouflage of reality, which means that we picture the world, as Ludwig Wittgenstein said, solely in terms of our quote language games. But diagrams are not simple camouflages of reality. They appear today more as a form of value-free nihilism. Nihilism claims that things are nothing. It is the idea that an entity can be, at any moment, nothing. Therefore, nihilism is a deliberate consumption of the being of things and events. If diagrams, as the rhetoric of today seems to claim, are the creation of possibilities of facts that did not exist before, the same possibilities of facts, by means of their specific being, could be condemned to return to nothing again. One of the origins of diagrammatic representation could be traced back to the awareness of urban space and the forms of governance that this entity demands. The advent of cartography in the course of the 17th and 18th centuries and of electromagnetism in the early 19th century could be seen as examples of the materialization of space through the representation and creation of a web of spatial transaction, networks, and flows. Urban space as a representation of an entity that goes beyond the opacity of the object and beyond the conventional nature of the plan can only be represented through the diagram, which is by definition a graphic tool that transcends the conventions of scale, plan, and object. It is interesting to note that Le Corbusier, the advocate of the plan as a fulcrum of architecture and urbanism, clearly stated in his project for the Ville Radieuse that the truth comes from the diagram. Thus, to place theory back in its true frame, as he claimed, a diagram is absolutely indispensable. This means that the governance of the transformations of the world is unthinkable without the representation of, quote, new forces that shape our environment. But in the course of the 20th century, the evolution of the diagram is no longer restricted to the transition from built form to urban space, to the totality of the environment. The diagram also feeds back into architecture itself, thus becoming one of the most fetishized iconographic forms within the discipline and its discourse. The so-called bubble diagrams done by graduate students at Harvard in the 1950s supposedly modeled ways of understanding space and ways of moving through space. The bubble diagrams are the ancestors of many diagrams produced today, a sort of semantic mimesis of movement and flows that releases architects from the fear of the unavoidable fixity of architecture. In this way, diagrams are still used in order to postpone the moment of the project, the inevitability of architecture, and thus the inevitability of decision, of conjecture, of the hazardous, and ultimately of form. It is interesting that this escape from architectural form by means of analysis of the forces that model its fixity became at a certain point an architectural form itself. For example, Ellison and Peter Smithson's entry to the 1958 Hauptstadt Berlin competition could be seen as a formalization of diagrammatic forces that transcend the individuality of the finite architectural form by being the physical structure of the city. Here, architecture almost mimetically represents the forces that are governing the city. Architecture begins to be the frozen expression of the forces. The concept of megastructure itself is nothing less than a frozen vector of the diagram. If the diagram is a vector of forces, then it is no longer possible to describe these forces in one finite urban artifact. Therefore, the urban artifact itself should mimetically resemble the form of the diagram. In this way, as the vector of forces becomes infrastructure, the city is imagined as a, quote, plug-in system, and itself becomes diagrammatic. This idea transcends different styles and different languages and goes beyond the type of megastructure itself. The same concept would be applied by very different architects, from Archie Graham, Plug-in City of 1964, to Louis Kahn, Richard's Medical Research Building of 57-60, to Cedric Price, Fun Palace of 60-61. In these cases, architectural form begins to respond to the challenge of the forces that are shaping the urban environment. One of these forces is clearly infrastructure and mobility. From this architectural idea, articulated since 1956 by Yona Friedman and others, Kenzo Tange was able to reconsider the actual form of the metropolis with his project for the Bay of Tokyo, 1960, a formal configuration based on the diagram of the plug-in system, which Arata Isozaki and Kisho Kurokawa would later apply within their idea of the, quote, capsular architecture. City in the Air of 1961 and Nagakin Capsule Tower of 1970-72. The power of the diagram is its ability to evoke the reshaping of an entire situation with one simple gesture. Thus, the most problematic aspect of the diagram is its capacity to immediately subsume something that is absolutely irreducible to any representation. This is even more evident in the recent use of diagrams, where the iconographic persuasion, or better, its graphic decor, becomes the main essence of its content. So there is a paradox in our discipline. On the one hand, architectural form is less and less important, and on the other, architectural thinking, the kind of autonomous, creative, and nihilistic architectural thinking that reduces things to always changing icons and signs to nothing, is able to reconstruct a representation of the world, updating it beyond its imminent possibilities. This ubiquitous iconographic power of diagrams as a representation and updating of everything beyond the being of things is ultimately summarized by Rem Koolhaas, who claims that architecture liberated from the obligation to construct can become, in fact, the diagram of everything. In this regard, diagrams could be seen as nihilistic instruments by means of which every new theory can create and delete its own representation of the world. This condition, far from being perceived in its necessary dimension, is only exploited as simplistic dodging in order to continuously start again. This is a problem of the diagram. It both acknowledges the irreducibility, complexity, and contradiction of the urban environment. environment, and at the same time reduces these complexities and contradictions to an idealization that always changes and starts again by virtue of its own logic. Moreover, its interpretation is also open to any kind of change and conclusion, a change and a conclusion that are finally liberated from the being of the city itself as a construct made up of things and events. If diagrams can liberate architecture and the city from their own being, this means that the change becomes change ex nihilo for its own sake. Being cannot sustain a constant coming from and returning to nothing, except in the realm of metaphysics. But the way research, information, and communication are produced today is unconsciously metaphysical. It does not establish an intersubjective knowledge through experience, but rather tries to construct icons of reality in order to sustain rhetoric and consensus. This rhetoric is then synthesized through an imagery, which can only be addressed, as Friedrich Engels said of ideology, through a false consciousness. In this sense, the diagram is not only increasing and creating possibilities for our imagination of reality, but in the end is putting reality into an alienating straitjacket in which our desire for the world is reduced to an endless iconographic nightmare. This, I believe, is the problematic nature of the hegemony of diagrammatic representation. This representation is constantly promising the production of a world yet to come by implicitly claiming the value-free nature of becoming. But because such a world has yet to come out of nothing, it is also ready to go back to nothing again. A question, therefore, arises. On what basis are we representing the hypotheses that so-called research today is supposed not only to illustrate but also produce? The evolution of the diagram from dispositif is one of the most powerful iconographic forms of architectural thinking. An iconography accepted everywhere and as an indisputable new kind of truth is not only the logic and necessary evolution of the diagram itself, but also the sign of a drift into an unconscious acceptance of the values and criteria of nihilism as value-free becoming. There is no going back to a pre-diagrammatic knowledge of the world. What must change is the discourse concerning diagrams. Diagrams must always be thought through their primary conventional nature and not simply as creation ex novo, that is, ex nihilo, of something optimistically yet to come or a new kind of reality. Always a new kind of reality, always ready to change into something else or to disappear. If there is a need to go on with diagrams, they must be invested with rigorous, semi-autonomous constructed entities that, while attempting to picture imminent aspects of things and events and their relationships, are also self-proclaimed representations of an idea, or better, of an ideology. In the realm of the diagram, as in the realm of the project itself, there is no escape from representation. And despite the connotations of intelligence, performance, and imminence, the affectivity of diagrams lies in their iconic appeal. This is how diagrams are conceived, produced, instrumentalized, and consumed today. But a challenge for an after-diagram era must go beyond diagrammatic representation. It must see if after our post-humanist sophistication, we can establish the teaching and consideration of architecture as an experience informed by a deliberately determined syntax of matter that takes place in intelligible form objects. Plans and sections will be the only necessary writing for a conjecture about the syntax of matter. Instead of the futile and decorative cannibalism of diagrams, we can re-establish a critical discourse, starting with an affection for the thing itself in our imagination of the world. thing here is not intended as a self-referential entity, free from any context, but in its original meaning as the actual fact that by means of itself determines our social, cultural, political, and ideological concerns. Diagrams will continue to exist, but a skeptical approach informed by the irreducible absoluteness of architecture will always mean to counter, as Niccolò Machiavelli would argue, the imagination of things by means of their effectual truth, their irreducible singularity, their concrete experience, and their inexorable being something, with the generic idealization and consumption of everything.